This is On Deadline, where the biggest stories, the smartest journalists, and the conversations that matter come together from Odyssey news stations across the country. When news breaks, the story doesn't stop there. I'm Christy Strasser. Let's get started. The U.S. is picking a lot of fights lately, most recently with Canada, a country whose out-of-control wildfires blanketed North America with smog and dangerous smoke last week. Congressman John James says Canada should have consequences if they don't address the over 900 active wildfires in their country. Here's the latest on our beef with Canada from WWJ in Detroit.
So what do you think of Michigan's air quality lately?
Oh, I think that it's pretty terrible, unacceptable, and I'm going to be working to adequately motivate our Canadian friends, family, and allies to take our health and economic concerns seriously.
So what would you suggest Canada should do based on this? We've seen multiple years in a row where we've seen Canadian wildfires affect air quality, this one particularly bad. What would you suggest they do?
Well, first and foremost, again, just to remind everybody, Michigan, Detroit specifically, have the unhealthiest air in the world. I've sent letters to Canada's prime minister about the wildfires for the second year in a row. I've spoken with directly Canada's ambassador, and we're going to be dropping something today, authorizing the Secretary of State to sanction anyone who is who's in line to take care of this, who is not taking care of it. Among the many things that our friends in Canada can do is more aggressively reduce the fuels before fires begin. Mechanical thinning, selected harvesting, prescribed burns. Indigenous peoples from all over Canada had been doing this for centuries, and only recently had they been prohibited from doing that. So again, Canada is a sovereign nation. We are a close ally, but allies and sovereign nations have responsibilities to their neighbors as well. So early detection, using things like satellites, tech-assisted fire detection, drones, remote sensors. The resources are only limited by imagination. They're willing to cooperate. And so we're willing to cooperate with our friends and partners in Canada, but they have to ask for help, and they have to compensate America for their years of scoffing at our health and economic concerns.
What if they don't?
Well, you know, they're a sovereign nation, but so are we. Like I said, I'm dropping a bill for sanctions it will allow the Secretary of State to determine anyone who is in line to fix this problem on Canada's side. If they don't, then there will be consequences associated with gassing and poisoning the American people. That is unacceptable from an ally or an adversary, and it is my job to protect Michigan and to defend the United States of America. Full stop. No apologies. So in addition, we're going to be providing additional motivation, authorizing the president for tariffs that will be used to help pay the cost of Michiganders and Americans' health issues. It's COPD, asthma, breathing issues. I got from one of my heart doctor friends that stroke and heart attack increase given the air, given poor air quality. And all of that cost would fall on the American taxpayer, and that is unacceptable. A lot of this, the tariff money would go directly to compensating American taxpayers and making sure that Michiganders are healthy. In addition to the economic detriment, we had plants that were shut down. We have tourism is a massive industry in the state of Michigan. And a lot of the Canadian leaders scoffed, laughed, and mocked us when we brought this concern up over the past few years. That is unacceptable. Again, they want to be treated like a sovereign nation. We're cool with that. They want to be treated like a friend. We're also cool with that. But they have responsibilities, and in continuing to mock, shirk, or smirk at American concerns, economic and health-wise, are unacceptable, and I'm duty-bound to defend Americans and Michiganders.
So you said you talked to some representatives up in Canada. Are they receptive to these requests? Are they looking like they're going to be making some changes in the future?
Look, I hope so, but the choice is up to them. They're making their decisions, and we're making ours. Again, we want to work in the full spirit of cooperation and in brotherhood. You can lead a horse to water, you can't make it drink. It's very, very tough to hug a friend when they have their elbows up, so to speak. So we want to come together. We want to collaborate on this and many, many other issues. But we need to dispense with the egos, get rid of the emotions, and work together to address the concerns of their American neighbors. Again, continuing to mock our health and economic concerns is not going to work. So if they want to continue along that path, okay, that's their choice. But there will be sanctions and tariffs associated with that to make the American people whole. If they want to work together in a collaborative manner to handle their wildfire situation and also potentially help with ours, because you know what? Michigan also has some very risky areas. I've been all over the state, and there's areas that have been hit hard with ice storms over the past few winters, and that leaves a lot of tinder on the ground. Because of some of the lack of investment and leadership failures we've seen in the state of Michigan, we are very vulnerable to our own fires. So again, I would prefer to work very closely and collaboratively with the Canadian government, because again, I'm a combat veteran. I deployed to Iraq, and I fought very closely with Canadians. I refuse to believe that wildfires are too big for America and Canada to come up with a solution with if we work together. But they have to be motivated to work with us and not against us, and certainly not dismiss our concerns.
Great.
President Donald Trump has imposed 50% tariffs on most Canadian goods, declaring that Canada has unfairly discriminated against American autos, alcohol, and dairy products. The move, announced earlier this afternoon, could unleash a new wave of economic chaos, with risks of higher inflation and further fraying of relations between two nations that had been closely woven together before President Trump's return to the White House. The administration official previewing the action said that Canada was one of the only nations, other than China, that retaliated against President Trump's previous tariffs and must be held accountable. Four Republican members of Congress wrote a letter to Canadian leaders demanding action on wildfires.
Congressman John James is going a step further, saying Canada should have consequences if they don't address the over 900 active wildfires in their country. So what if the wildfire smoke doesn't improve year over year?
I'm dropping a bill for sanctions it will allow the Secretary of State to determine anyone who is in line to fix this problem on Canada's side. If they don't, then there will be consequences associated with gassing and poisoning the American people. That is unacceptable from an ally or an adversary.
And the wildfire smoke continues to impact Michigan's air quality. Even President Donald Trump is calling for Canada to better manage their forest. James is running for governor of Michigan as a Republican against businessman Perry Johnson in the August 4th primary.
Because the United States is large and topographically varied. While one side of the country is engulfed in smoke from a fire, another part is concerned about a tropical storm. Here's more on tropical storm Bertha Prep from WWL in New Orleans.
Wind shear, dry air, high pressure, they are all helping us to see Tropical Storm Bertha struggle to get any strength or present any real threat to most of southeast Louisiana. However, the National Hurricane Center is warning that maximum sustained winds right now are 50 miles an hour, and they extend outward about 80 miles from the center of Bertha, which is making its way slowly towards Louisiana. Forecasters say that we will start feeling tonight tropical storm conditions along the Louisiana coast. That would include Grand Isle and Lower Jefferson Parish. So to help us understand how they're getting ready down there and what folks should expect along the Jefferson Parish coast, Raymond Guidry joins us, Director of Emergency Management for Jefferson Parish. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, if we got to have a tropical storm, this is the kind I like, the kind that struggles to get organized and that may bring no rain at all to the immediate metro or the North Shore, but we will have some impacts on the coast. So tell me what you're watching there at the EOC for Jefferson Parish and what you're telling folks, particularly in Lower Jefferson, to get ready for.
So same thing that's been echoed over and over again. You know, the storm's not doing a great job for itself. It shifted a little more south, which is good for us because it keeps the heavier rainstorms off the coast. But it's just a warning coming from us. It's like, just please don't let your guard down yet. We still could see some localized flooding, though as it goes and progresses, it looks less and less likely. But everything's so saturated already because it rains every other day. We just tell people don't let their guard down yet. As far as Grand Island and Lafitte, we're We have open lines of communication with their leadership, and we're here to support their needs with whatever may come up.
So right now, are there any emergency precautions being taken in Lafitte, in Grand Isle, or anywhere in Lower Jefferson?
So we making sure that all of our pump stations and supplementary pumps are at full capacity.
Grand Isle probably sees its biggest crowds of the year during the rodeo. Anything threatening the ability for the rodeo to go off as planned because of Tropical Storm Bertha?
Well, I think it's definitely going to put a little dent in their week. But hopefully the storm keeps tracking the way it is. We're looking at, you know, very minimum coastal flooding. The biggest concern that we would have would be cars getting inundated or roads blocked. But, you know, it's nothing that that area hasn't sustained before.
All right. Highway 1, the only way in and out of Grand Isle. You going to be able to keep that dry so people can get in and out?
We're sure trying our best.
All right. We're only talking, what, maybe a 4-foot surge, right?
Yeah, 1 to 4 foot. Everybody's leaning towards 3-ish. But, yeah, you know, you prepare for the worst, and when it doesn't happen, it's a success.
All right. Well, let's consider this kind of a practice run and hope that we don't ever actually get the real deal.
Yes, sir.
So, fingers and toes crossed, it's looking like Bertha isn't that big and won't leave heavy damage in her path. But there's one tragedy we already know happened, and that's the death of a 19-year-old Texan in the war in Iran. Here's KRLD with that story.
The remains of a Carrollton soldier due to be returned to U.S. soil, Private Isabella Gonzalez, killed in an Iranian airstrike in Jordan over the weekend.
And the flag-draped coffins of Gonzalez and three fellow soldiers will arrive at Dover Air Force Base tomorrow to be greeted by President Trump. Meanwhile, tributes are pouring in for the 19-year-old that Gonzalez, who was just starting to live life.
Gonzalez was from Carrollton and was a 2025 Hebron High School grad. As many took to social media to remember Gonzalez, even people who never met her wanted to pay their respects.
I do have the opportunity of making sure we never forget her name. And we all are aware of the sacrifice she and her family have made. Thank you, Isabella Gonzalez, for serving your country and for serving us the way you did.
The Pentagon says they're still investigating what happened, but a first lieutenant from Hawaii died in the attack as well. Gonzalez was assigned to a unit based in Germany. She's the 17th American to die in the war with Iran. From the 24-Hour News Center, Austin, York News Radio 1080, KRLE.
And Democratic Senate candidate James Tallarico says Private Gonzalez's death strengthens his opposition to Operation Epic Fury. Speaking at a DeSoto rally last night, Tallarico described the conflict as a reckless war.
We should not be sending our brave young men and women like Isabella off to die in another forever war. Our service members love this country. It's time for this country to love them back.
President Trump says the military campaign is intended to keep Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. Tallarico's Republican counterpart running for Senate, Attorney General Ken Paxton, said on X, "We lift up and honor the family of Private Isabella Gonzalez. We pray that your hearts find comfort during this difficult time. This is such a tragic loss. Thank you for your service, Private Gonzalez, from a grateful nation."
Even before the death of a teenager, President Trump faced opposition for his war in Iran. And that has people thinking about who should run for the Oval Office next. Here's more.
There is a senator from Georgia who is having a moment. His name is John Ossoff. He's articulate. He's good looking. You know, he did well on corruption in the Trump administration. And last week, he grilled Jay Clayton, who is the nominee for the director of national intelligence. Well, Ossoff, you may remember, he asked Clayton whether he considered Joe Biden the winner of the 2020 election during a confirmation hearing. Over and over and over. John Ossoff. He was good. He was very good. Is he the next golden boy? As I said, good looking, polished. Well, he could be. But the reason I'm bringing him up today is not about his name on the next list of potential Democratic presidential candidates in 2028. What do you think about this? Okay, so it's the one above his name on a number of polls. It is Kamala Harris, former vice president. I was actually kind of surprised about this to see it. No, she hasn't come out and said that she's going to run for president. But on that list, there she was at the top. I say, please do not run for president, Kamala Harris. Step aside. You have too much baggage. Okay, what Democrat isn't thinking that? What Democrat? It's hard to admit if you are a Democrat. You know, she could have done something, surely. We know she was the VP. She must have seen Biden's decline. A true leader would have said something. And, you know, she was in a tough place. She said she wasn't kept in the loop. I read her book. What do you say? Okay, well, one texter said no to Kamala Harris for president. Buttigieg or Ossoff. Kamala can't win. She had her chance and she whiffed it. She got a raw deal. She did. Dems de breaks. So I have great respect for the former vice president. Her work in the Senate, district attorney of San Francisco. I hate saying this. I really do. One texter says, I could not vote for Harris for president for the same reason that I couldn't vote for her last time. She knew what was going on and she did not speak about it. You know, we're not leaving Republicans out of this. Weigh in. Maybe you think, yes, she should definitely run because that would improve your chances. Others are saying, yes, yes. Ossoff, go for it. One says she struggles with both. Agree with you. Step aside. I want to hear somebody who has a difference of opinion here. But at this point, as I'm reading through these texts, Ron in St. Paul, weigh in. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I agree with your statement, and I don't want her to run. But I think that's putting a lot on her for the last election. There was only one real Democrat that came out questioning Biden's mental capabilities, and that was a guy from Minnesota. I mean, where was everybody else, you know?
Right.
I hope they have a plan for this, hopefully they get their stuff straight. It'd be nice to see somebody new on the ticket, and I agree with you. I do like Ossoff as well.
At this point, is he the top one for you?
Yeah, I'd say so. He was impressive. He was impressive in that questioning. I just don't want another 16. I'd like it down to 3 or 4 here. And yes, Kamala tried. She lost. Let's just go on to the next one.
On to the next one.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.